and I'm going to go to Lydia here. Lydia?
James is on the call, just FYI.
Okay,
oh, hi,
real quick. I got to tell you what's going on. Hey, this is Lydia, and I'm feeling extremely overwhelmed because I had an event, and I'm just helping pack up and clear out. So I heard what y'all are talking about. It sounds extremely extensive, and I think that if you sign up people, you know, by sections as you were, I think you're doing, that would be great. I can't commit to anything because I want to give it my full attention, and I want to take a look. I want to read what you're looking at, to read what it is that I'm committing to, because it's overwhelming. I mean, I feel overwhelmed just by listening to it. So leave me as the dab of glue and the last of the committee to commit. I will make a commitment. I just want to make it with my heart and my mind and my spirit all, you know, paying attention. All right? And I apologize.
Yeah,
we just had a big car show over here on Abbot Kinney, and it was loud. It was fun, but it was loud.
Okay. Well, we do have the next meeting set on the 3rd, which is a week from today at the same time. So I'm trying to, you know, fit, and then there'll be one more meeting before the 16th. So we really have this meeting, next meeting, and one more meeting before we would be trying to submit. So I tried to pick a time where people could, you know, if there's another time somebody wants to throw out, that's fine, but it has to be at least next Sunday for a week's notice. So, you know, I'm hoping it still will be a good time to make some progress where people can kind of make progress. But and then, so James, did you want to weigh in at all?
No, I just got on the call. I just wanted to let you know I was here. Thanks.
Okay. So I'm seeing three articles. Article 4 is supposed to be the priority. And then also Article 15 would be another article to take a look at. And then maybe if we can... Article 3, did you bring that up, Nancy? And then also just changing our office, which is Article 2, making sure that the office is correct.
There's a whole bunch that I want to change, but I was trying to focus on priorities of what is most important at this moment. And to me, the election is, you know, getting reform before the next one and also before another referendum. I was thinking those two, but actually other things are... and. You said Article 2, something in Article 2, the principal office. Where is it about the name? I mean, the name needs to be Inc. now, and I'm not sure if that's been done. And it's a pity that we can't really have a hard copy of this stuff. It's irritating. I have a hard copy of 2016, but the index copy of the online has things that the 2016 bylaws doesn't have, and that's not this is very difficult for us to be amending. Anyway, the name somewhere needs to be changed to Inc. at the end, the new name. And oh, I can think of a whole lot of things off the top of my head, but I'm like, you know, committees. Like LSB is having committees because we have one station has zero committees. And then that the LSB shall meet at least every other month. It should be every month. And that will eliminate some problems with a station that only meets 6 times a year. It's one of our stations. And,
all right. So I just want to mark these, Nancy, as you go through them.
Yeah.
So what you just
I'm sorry.
About,
yeah,
Article
I see what you mean.
7. Hold on. Article 7, local station boards, unless you're talking about the PNB committee.
No, local
but
station board.
Time and place, that's Article 7, time and place is B. And then what was the one right before that where
Section 10, Article 7, Section 10, advisory, LSB advisory committees. It has the word may. You know, the LSB may have advisory committees. It should be shall have, and we should list some. You know, they should have a finance committee. They should have a personnel committee. They should have a governance or outreach, whatever. And then, let's see. Let me stay in that area since I'm there. Let's see.
Well, and so as we go through this, what we'd want to do is, you know, cut and paste the item into an email and highlight, you know, kind of do it as where we're scratching out and adding, right? So any of these items, I mean, you could, in theory, just send what you're talking about, you know, grab that portion of Section 10, you know, and put it into the, because we talked about having a working document on Google, but I don't know whether that's, first of all, I'd have to replace it with the most recent version, because I have an old version from 16. But then in
that's what I'm using.
What?
I'm using that too, because that's the only hard copy I have, and I like to highlight on paper. But Beth said something interesting. She said the indexed version is considered more updated than any of the others. And that indexed version was the one that I, you know, took a screenshot and sent you, and it shows 30 days after the notice date. You know, I would really like a little more. She wasn't really, really sure, but she said she thought so. I really would like us to have a common base to start working on.
Okay.
That's how much work we have to do.
Yeah. I mean, I can do that in the Google Doc, that I can replace the Google Doc with this. It's a 50-page document of cutting and pasting, but it sounds like that might be what's necessary, because we need to be looking at, I mean, even just what, how we spent the first half hour of this meeting, not, you know, looking at the right one. So, so assuming that was done, maybe we can, then you could make the changes that you want on the Google Doc. So maybe now what we do is we just go slowly through the Article 4, the one that's our priority, which is Article 4, and we see what about it we would want to change. I can, there's no revision to the Section 1, just as I'm looking at it. So that
what article are you in? What
I'm looking at Article 4.
Four.
Section
okay.
1 is the same. I'm just trying to, if you're working off of the old PDF, I'm just trying to. Article 4 is, or Section 2 is the same. 1 and 2 and 3 seems to be the same. 4 seems to be the same. Five seems to be the same. 6 seems to be the same. Sorry, I'm just going back and forth. This will take a moment longer.
When you say 6 seems to be the same, you're saying Section 6? Or you're saying, like, Article 6? What are you saying?
Section 6.
Okay.
So,
well, that one I want to change right away. Fair
right,
campaign provision.
Right, I understand
provision.
That. I'm just saying that it's the same as the one I emailed out. Okay? The part that's different is Section 8. That would need, you'd need to go to the online for, Section 9 has a something qualifying it, which is odd. And, yeah, so it's really Section 8 and 9 that we'd have to work off the online version. So if that's the case, then maybe I can just cut and paste that, you know, so that we're looking at the real Article 4 with those in. So anyway, so unless someone has another idea on how to go through this, I'll just read everything and anywhere we get where we want to stop and propose something, we can. Does anyone have an issue with proceeding that way? And we can, we may want to set a time certain to adjourn. Do we want to entertain 3:30? I'm Pacific, sorry. 3:30, which is in 20 minutes, or 3:45, which would give us about 35 minutes more with homework.
I leave it up to William since he's on East Coast. William.
It's still daylight here, so I'm not worried.
Okay, thank you. William brought up the California Corporation Code, and I really don't understand how to get into that and to check something like what constitutes open meetings, because that's hanging. That's a snag in the governance committee. Like, you know, there's a debate of what is open. You know, can you record it? Can you, because one board does not allow you to record the Zoom or record the audio. A motion was made, a substitute motion was made to check with the Articles of Incorporation for what constitutes open. Well, I go online and I cannot find this California Corporation Code. I don't know who do I call to ask. Do I go to the Attorney General's office? I mean, the Attorney General's office, it's not easy to ask a question. Anyway, that is a real, you know, that's like the base, that Articles of Incorporation. And last year when we started out, we thought we were going to get the new ones. But Beth said they're online, and I cannot find them. I don't know how to access. How can we find these things?
Point of information, Jonathan.
Are you muted, Janine?
Yes, I was. Thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
One way is to call the Congress person's district, I'm sorry, the state legislative district or state senator's district in Alameda County and or any county and ask, you know, one of the state legislators, California state legislators, and they should know which department and give you phone numbers, although it may take a while to get an answer, at least a day or two, but you might be able to reach somebody by phone. So we're talking California state senators or California state assembly members in any district. But since I think our foundation is registered in Alameda County, unless it's been changed to Los Angeles, I think it's still in Alameda. So it would be that whatever
William
district.
William, for the fact.
Thank you.
Hey, go ahead, William. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's been moved officially to Los Angeles County. We're not dealing with Alameda County, as far as I know. I think I had something else to say, but I can't remember what it was. Oh, I know, California Corporate Code. If we were wondering about how to get to it, I just found it by looking online. I mean, there's a lot of stuff there to look at, but if you look up for whatever the subject is, you know, try to search for it, you can find it. But I found it, and I don't have it in front of me now, so I can't tell you how, but I just found it doing a search.
This is James.
Go ahead, James.
I just want to confirm what William just said. It's true about how to find the California Corporations Code. You Google it and you'll find it. And it's also true what he said, that Pacific has officially relocated its headquarters to Los Angeles.
Question, Nancy.
Okay, let me just follow up with James for a moment. So we would just, it's just a formality that we change our bylaws, or is it in a gray zone until we change our bylaws?
You know, change them to do what? To say where we're headquartered?
Yeah, I mean, it may be changed at the Secretary of State, but if it's not changed in our bylaws, does it create a gray area until we change it in our bylaws?
I think it would, yeah. I think it's advisable to bring ourselves up to date, of course. Yes.
Okay. Go ahead, Nancy.
Yeah, so, okay, I understand California Corporation is online, but how do you get a question like that answered? How do I? Do I have to read the entire thing to find an answer?
Unfortunately,
well, and then
that's
also like your interpretation. Go ahead, James.
I was going to say that's the little trying to figure out how to say it. That's the racket the lawyers have carved out for themselves. That's how most people do it. You have to ask a lawyer, but there are, you know, other than that, you have to read it yourself and figure out how to make it make sense. And you can look for, if you have a specific question about how a part of the law operates, you can look it up in the statutes. You know, I don't know if they have California statutes annotated in New Jersey. That's the New Jersey statutes annotated. And you look up the subject matter of the question that you're trying to ask, and you look, then you can find out if there are any cases on that subject, and it'll tell you what the current law is by reading the cases. It's not like there's any place you go where you just get easy answers for that. That's why lawyers have a racket.
I was afraid of that. Mm.
Well, I have a follow-up question, Nancy, to that, which is, I wonder if our own attorney, I mean, I don't want to burden him with a bunch of questions, but if he has a definition, because otherwise we're making assumptions, you know what I mean? Like, unless we seek out our own advice on it, it should really be the Pacifica lawyer that forwards us a definition, and that we could, as long as we don't take too much time, you know what I mean, because he's a paid entity. I mean, I think a carefully worded question, if there's something about it that's unclear, then it could be forwarded rather than bringing somebody who's not part of Pacifica into the process.
I have a question to James. Since you're a national director, is it okay, Janine?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay.
But then you can drive in and look at this.
Yeah. Since you're a national director, do we have any California lawyers? I mean, helping Pacifica, I would think we do, but I mean, that could
we
answer
have,
the question.
We have lots
we have,
of lawyers within Pacifica. One of them is...
Well,
among them are Jan Goodman and Eric Jacobson, and James Osborne was one before he left. So we do have some lawyers within Pacifica. We have a California attorney who has helped us on the cases where we, for example, where we're suing for the legal fees in the lawsuit, the so-called Pacifica Safety Net of KPFA Protectors lawsuit against our directors. We have a lawyer that's assisting in that, so we have someone who's admitted to the bar in California who joins us when we have to submit cases in California. Do we have a regular lawyer who is in California who does this kind of work? I think we're doing that on a case-by-case basis. May I ask a question of what specifically the
Again, I apologize, I joined late. What specifically are we talking about is how to get legal opinions when we want to suggest changes to the bylaws to make sure that they would comport with the current California code?
Well, I was going to have, yeah, I think she's talking about meetings, open meetings, because it sort of came up as far as, you know, whether it's LSC meetings, PNB meetings, committee meetings, that it'd be more accessible for the public. And
I see.
So I think that that kind of evolved into a discussion about whether the California corporation, you know, the code is, you know, what's the definition
of a public meeting?
Of a public meeting, or, you know, what are the requirements? So, and Nancy was saying that, you know, there's a lot to sift through and could, and, but I guess what I was suggesting is that if there is a question, if it could be very specific, and then we could forward it to someone. I mean, even though Jan and Eric are lawyers and they are board members, or LSC members, rather, for KPFK, I don't know that they should be answering that question.
Right, it gets involved in Pacifica politics.
Yeah,
I understand. So I would just say this about that. One thing is that the California Corporations Code is actually pretty clear. They have something called, I think they have a plain language requirement in California where they're not allowed to make it difficult to read the statutes. They have to be in plain English that people can understand, you know, average people with average, you know, abilities can understand. So you can actually look up some of these laws and you can, they're pretty easy to understand. Sometimes, you know, they get very long sentences and they got a lot of clauses in them and you can, you know, it can be confusing to figure out what they're talking about, and are they still talking about it a paragraph later when they're still in the same sentence. But for the most part, they're pretty clear. So the first thing I would try to do is try to do it ourselves in this committee, and then if that doesn't work, you know, then get to a point where you need to ask somebody, what does this mean, or what's the interpretation? And again, if you want to know what a specific how a specific part of a law has been interpreted by the courts, you go to the cases and you find the cases that are on that subject matter. And there's a way to do that in legal research. You know, they have the cases broken down by categories and subcategories, so you can find out where those things are. And then you want to do what they call shepherdize them, which is go and find out whether there's any recent cases since that particular casebook has been published that have come out since then, and that's a little pocket book that is attached to the back cover of a case law book where it has the cases that have come out since the book was published. So, I mean, there are ways to do it, and, you know, maybe you could use the skills of people like Eric or, you know, anybody else who has done any kind of legal research. You don't have to be a lawyer to do that. It's anybody who's, you know, done legal research or been a paralegal or something of that sort can do that kind of stuff. Because you're not writing a brief. You're not appearing in front of a court. You're just researching.
Point of information, Jonathan.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
I think the first thing would be just to get a copy of the California Corporate Code that would pertain to nonprofits if there is a separate section of it, in this case Pacifica's foundation. Simply if we just at least have the basic language, then we can deal with trying to interpret it in terms of any type of modification of our bylaws, etc. So I don't know, do you already have a copy of it, or is that the problem? You haven't been able to find a copy of it.
It's online. It is online. But
yeah,
I'm gonna
see if Nancy or I can copy and paste the portion that we are not clear about or something like that. Because I agree, you know, I think, you know, the meetings, for instance, I know the PNB meetings don't allow for any public comment. And so, you know,
oh,
I mean,
they
I
do.
Don't know if that would change.
They do in the bylaws, but those are in-person meetings. We have not had in-person meetings since, I think, 2015, PNB in-person meetings.
Okay, I'm just referring to having a copy of the entire California Corporate Code, however unwieldy, just to simply have it and then refer to any sections or other subsections of the code that pertain to nonprofits, just so we have a copy of the entire code. I'm sure it'll be huge, but at least we have a copy of it to refer to and then do further research to find out which provisions within it apply to whatever question we're interested in relative to the bylaws.
Okay.
Can I speak on that briefly?
Okay, go ahead, William.
Actually, it's James.
Sorry.
It's one of the problems with law books is when you buy them, within 6 months they're out of date because they don't have the current information. That's why they do that thing called they have a section at the back of the book where they update things that have happened since the book was published. So really what you want to do is get either access to a service, and that can be expensive, a service that you, where you can see that stuff online, or you just go to a law library or any county library, any major library in California, for that matter, where they have these books, and then you can copy the relevant parts, including the parts that are the most up-to-date. Buying the book, it becomes obsolete almost immediately.
Oh, yes. Oh.
I would think
okay,
they would.
So,
I'm sorry.
I just kind of want to move on. So I think for our next meeting, I can make sure that is attached in our various things so we can, you know, look at it together and maybe see if we can find the area that somewhat describes it to see if we can straighten out any questions. So Article 4, I mean, I'd like to propose that we adjourn at, or I'd like to entertain a motion to adjourn at 3:45. That gives us about another 15 minutes. Does anybody want to? I'm just trying to figure out a time to adjourn before we dive in and start looking at this article.
Well, when we get to 15 minutes, we might think differently to a court extension, 5-6 minutes more. I really think
well,
we should.
Well, if you want, I'll say 4. 7 Eastern, 6 Central. So we'll just go for a half hour and we'll just go through Article 4 right now. Does anybody need me to cut and paste Article 4 into an email for them, or are they all able to look at it? Again, there's only 2 sections that have seemed to get modifications. So section 1 is delegates defined. It says the members of each class for each foundation radio station shall separately elect delegates who shall serve as representatives of the members in the election of foundation directors for each radio station area and who shall have such other duties and powers as are specified in these bylaws. That's section 1. Section 2, eligibility nomination of delegates. A, eligibility. Any listener sponsor member in good standing, except radio station management personnel or foundation management personnel or staff members, may be nominated for the position of listener sponsor delegate for the foundation radio station with which he, she is affiliated by the signatures of 15 listener sponsor members in good standing who are also affiliated with that radio station, provided, however, that no person who holds any elected or appointed public office at any level of government, federal, state, or local, or is a candidate for such office, shall be eligible for election to the position of a delegate. A delegate shall be deemed to have resigned the position of delegate if she or he becomes a candidate for public office or accepts a political appointment during his or her term as a delegate. This restriction shall not apply to civil service employment by governmental agencies. So
maybe we should advisory. This restriction shall not apply to advisory positions for government agencies. Because we've had two lawsuits about an LSC being appointed to advise Mayor Kwan of Oakland, and Sharon Brown was she was an advisory to the city of Los Angeles and small businesses, and those two people were kicked out of the LSV and PM, one of them PMB, and then it started a lawsuit. It just finished, I think, a year ago. The Sharon Brown lawsuit finally finished. It started in 2017, and in the judgment read, it's very strange. This same organization has had two similar cases, and we find there's no crime, there's no power, there's no vote in being in an advisory committee or an advisory position for a city or government agency. So, you know, we wasted a whole bunch of money just because the LSB is wanting to get rid of one of their members and doing it that way. And we should put advisory committees or in anything advisory, because it doesn't say. It says, this restriction shall not apply to civil service employment by government agencies. Should we put in civil service employment by government and advisory committees or advisory positions in which there's no payment, you know, there's no... I'm not sure what kind of, anyway, advisory position of an advisory nature without any vote. I mean, if it's a government agency, they should not be. I mean, I'd like to stop us from having another lawsuit. I'll just
okay,
write down a note,
so
advisory.
Where exactly, so you would say, where it says any staff member maybe nominated, do we want to just say this does not extend to, at the end of,
I thought you were in section two,
A.
Eligibility.
Yeah, so at the very end where it says,
yeah,
this restriction shall not apply to civil service employment by governmental agencies, and then I can put a comment, nor... give it to me. What do you think?
Nor of an advisory nature? See, the first one is being paid, civil service employment. But the second one, this advisory is not necessarily paid, but nor positions by government agencies, advisory positions of government agencies. I mean,
okay, so nor positions of advisory, of an advisory nature, but how do we say unpaid? Nor...
No, even if it's advisory position, paid or unpaid, I mean, it's still an advisory position. So nor advisory positions of advisory positions of government agencies. Well, let's just put it like that way to get rid of it and then come back and polish it up later. Advisory positions of government agencies. So that would cover paid or unpaid, both. I don't think she was paid.
Okay. So then I'm going to keep going for the nomination. This is about 3 pages long. So, all right, nomination procedures, which is Section 1, Item B. Each member seeking to be a nominee shall submit, 1, the required number of nominating signatures on the form provided by the local election supervisor, 2, a statement of whether the candidate is running for election as a listener sponsor delegate or as a staff delegate, 3, a written statement of up to 500 words in length by the candidate introducing himself, herself, and his or her interest in or qualifications for serving as a delegate, which statement shall be distributed or otherwise made available to the members entitled to vote along with the written ballot, and 4, a statement acknowledging that she, he has read and understood the fair campaign provisions set forth in Section 6 of this article of the bylaws. The names up to 5 of the candidate nominators may be listed at the end of the candidate's statement. Each candidate also may, but is not required to, for informational purposes, indicate his or her gender and race or ethnic heritage. I'll take any comments or questions or move on.
I was thinking to ask this task force, what do you think that the candidate is still in a nomination mode and cannot become a candidate until after they have recorded their candidate statement, their 1-minute candidate statement, after they have participated in candidate forum, then they become an actual candidate. That way we would be insured to get participation in the candidate statement recording, because they would not be able to win if they did not have it done. As it stands now, they have to have a written statement, a 500 and a 250. They have to have even a 250, just one statement, they can get by with it, and 15 signatures. But if they had to record a 1-minute candidate statement and they had to participate in a forum in order to be on the ballot, I think that is it's well-deserved. I think the membership deserves that, to be an actual candidate, because look at how many candidates have not recorded anything. And so on KPFD, we've got 17 out of 25. That means 8 have not recorded anything. They're not in any forums. So how does a voter make an informed vote? Possible. So I think it's not too overreaching to require them to do those things first. What do you think? Anyway, I just want to put that out
there. Discussion?
And it's just so idiotic that we're a radio foundation and we have candidates that have no way of getting their 1-minute cart recorded. It's just crazy.
This is James.
I'm sorry, it sounded like William or James.
I'm sorry, it was James.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think Nancy has a point about the recording of the carts, but I think that was partly due to COVID. I mean, and I don't know how it works at different stations, but at WBAI, when the last time I ran, we were able to go into the station and we were able to have the board ops help us to record our statements. And so it was all good quality for radio broadcast.
and people didn't have to have their own equipment or go elsewhere to get equipment. And it was just the fact of COVID that and that stations were closed and not open to the general public as a safety measure that prevented that from happening this time around. So we might not need to write something into the bylaws about that, although, you know, maybe we should, because this situation may recur. The way things are going, maybe not in another 100 years, but it may recur before then. But I also wanted to suggest, I just wanted to make that comment on what Nancy was saying, but also I wanted to suggest that in the beginning part of this section of the bylaws, it says about getting the required number of signatures. I think, again, back when I ran some time ago, the required number of signatures was 15, and it turned out that everybody decided to meet up at a certain place in town where everybody came, and the candidates just signed each other's petitions, and it was more like an artificial hurdle to becoming a candidate than a real measure of how much support someone might have. I think the initial reason for this was to ensure that potential candidates had some kind of support before they could get on the ballot. But I think this time around, actually, the local election supervisor was encouraging the other candidates to endorse each other's candidate. It wasn't signatures, it was endorsements they were looking for this time. And she was actively encouraging the candidates to endorse every other candidate just so they could go over that artificial hurdle. And it hardly seems worth having that hurdle there if people are going to feel pressured by the election supervisor to sign everybody else's, to endorse every other candidate, you know, so that they can qualify. And I have to tell you, I have to go to another meeting right now, so I'm just going to drop that and have to run, and I apologize. But I just wanted to make those comments. Thank you.
A point of information in response to James.
Okay, go ahead.
I think that what we have here actually is a missing component of being able to facilitate, similarly to how we've been unable to reach the listeners, except by email blasts, which cost a lot of money to be able to reach the membership list. So when you're talking about candidates being able to, let's say, be able to do get signatures on their petitions, they really have no way to reach the listeners, especially during the pandemic, but even not during a pandemic, it's difficult for candidates to reach listeners unless they just happen to have access to many, many listeners who can respond to them privately. So this is a similar problem as to even getting carts on the air currently in this election, as well as on-air candidate forums. So again, it all really gets back to how democratic our system is really depends on to what degree all of these processes do not cost listener or local station board candidates money just simply to reach the listeners who are going to vote for them in the elections. Many of the listeners don't even know there's an election, I would bet. Even at this stage, many listeners don't even know that they were sent a ballot. So they have no way to know if when they didn't receive the ballot. It's the same problem. Essentially, that's a separate problem, of course. This is something we really have to look into because, you know, the National Election Supervisor does have allegiance send out the ballots, at least in KPFK. And it was confirmed to me by Renee over the phone on a national board meeting that she did have a ballot sent to me, which I never received. It was never in my spam folder. I am receiving every other notice from Pacifica, so I have a bona fide membership. I'm on the contact list of Pacifica, yet for some reason during the referendum and during this election, I still have not received a ballot. I'm now going to order a by-mail paper ballot, which the deadline apparently is the last day of this month to order one. So at least I'll have a paper ballot to cast my vote. I'm not going to request another email ballot sent because I've just been going around in circles. The only way I got an email ballot during the referendum was because Jasmine, the local election supervisor, and Renee actually made sure to send me one directly, an email ballot. So they have to bypass the service, which for some reason did not get me the ballot. There needs to be a specific investigation at the national board member with the executive director included to find out the actual cause of this problem by contacting Allegiance and their software experts to explain why in the hell that we would not have received it. And if we did not receive it, Allegiance should have had a notice that the email was not delivered. And that information should have been reported to Renee immediately, and it should be updated every day. I'm sorry, just jamming all this stuff together. Thank you.
This is Nancy on the stack.
Go ahead, Nancy.
Uh-huh. Yes. You know, there's a lot of probably a lot of people who have not received their ballots yet, but they are bona fide members. And how would we know they're not getting their ballots? Because they're instructed by a cart on the air from the NES saying, if you have not received it, you know, go to suchandsuch.org and request a ballot. Okay, so whoever is on that end knows that this person did not get a ballot. But the main system does not know. I mean, it's like a secret. So we really need to encourage the people who did not receive a ballot to, of course, go through the elections.pacifica.org to request one, but to also inform the membership people at the station. And I would say not just the membership coordinator, but also the LSB. I mean, somebody who's interested in elections. Because, you know, it may be the membership coordinator is making a lot of mistakes and does not want anybody to know. At our station in KPFT, we've had the same person handling membership for decades. And we had an election in, what was it, 2018? No, the first referendum. A lot of complaints from Pacifica programmers and Pacifica volunteers who lived in a certain zip code. And this zip code is a black neighborhood near our station. Lots of people did not get their ballots from that area. And if you did not know the election was going on and you did not worry, right, that you did not get a ballot. I'm doing all double negatives. But what I mean is, how would they know unless they had some kind of education? Like, if you did not receive a ballot, we're having an election right now. You need to inform not just the request a ballot place, but also, you know, some other, maybe the LSB, maybe the membership coordinator, but not just the membership coordinator. Because you don't know who to trust or not trust. Really, I mean,
well,
if that kind of bad thing happens.
So, well, one is we're still on the nomination process, you know. So I want to kind of.
I didn't hear what you said. We're still what?
We're still on the nomination process in the articles. So I want to be careful that we're not jumping around too much, because if we're making if we want to make a revision somewhere, I want to be able to notate it. I don't know what the solution, unless someone, we literally have somebody who can, I know that the email, auto email programs often show whether someone's opened an email or not. And I think that the election supervisor has been able to tell us how many people have opened the email. I think the backup to that is, if emails aren't opened, what is then the B plan to follow up? You know, is there some kind of a roto dial that could be done on their phone that until they are reached, even if it is, you know, leaving a voicemail or whatever, you know? I think that that would be my, you know, to pursue that sort of thing.
Jonathan on the stack.
Yeah, I say that because, but we should, I do want to sort of stay in order, because now we're 10 minutes left to the meeting.
Okay, I would add 4 and 5, a recorded 1-minute candidate statement, and 5, a participation in the forum as part of the nomination process. That way, they cannot be on the ballot unless they have those things done.
So, okay, 1 is the required number of signatures, 2 is the statement, 3 is... Okay, so it seems like 2 is a statement of whether the candidate's run. Oh, for whether it's listener, sponsor, or staff, then the 3 is the 500-word statement. 4 is that they acknowledge the fair campaign provisions, and 5, that's it. Okay, and so what you're saying is there's a 5 right now.
Okay, so 2, yeah, 2 says, statement of whether the candidate is running for the election for listener or staff. All right. Okay, so 4 is that. 5 is the candidate nominators listed. What? I don't know about this thing. This must be a long time ago.
That's not a 5. That's not a fixed item. That's 5 as in 5 candidate nominators can be listed in the statement. You can list
so
the 5 nominators. Yeah. So 5, what you're saying is...
1-minute candidate recorded statement.
So they would be they would only... completion of the nomination process would require...
Yeah, 5, a recorded 1-minute candidate statement. And 6 would be the participation in a candidate forum. But these are absolutely required before they are a true candidate. This is a part of the nomination procedure. I mean, it's just I don't think anybody disagrees. You know, the membership needs to have some kind of input from the candidates in order to make an informed vote. And we have left these things just kind of like, oh, there's COVID, so, well, who cares? And so what's playing on KPFT now is only the few that had their statement done and they've hacked it down to 30 seconds. But not everybody, not all the candidates are getting aired. When I say candidate carts are airing at KPFT, it's only the ones that had turned in a cart. This should never happen again. I mean, everybody should have a cart, otherwise they should not be able to run. It means the LES and NES and I think the station should, help these people to get it done, whether it's in a car or whether it's on a phone or whatever quality. Of course, the better quality is good. I sent around an email that I received, a complaint from a former board member of KPFA saying when Daniel Borgstrom's cart was played, the music was really loud, and I listened to it, and I had it. Sometimes I had a little bit difficulty understanding what he was saying because the music was getting a little bit loud, but most part I could understand it, but why is music there in the first place? I mean, it's really...
Right. I mean, I didn't know that they would be applying music onto our candidate statements. That's even to me, that is...
unnecessary.
Here, because, music has
an emotional...
And
time-consuming.
Time-consuming
to produce.
This is what I wrote. 5 is completion of nomination process would require a recorded 1-minute candidate statement.
And participation
On-air quality. How about that? And then 6 is completion of nomination process would require the member participate in at least 1 on-air forum, candidate forum, I guess.
Yeah, on-air quality as much as possible. I mean, I don't think we want to restrict ourselves to only what is considered, fancy quality, because there will be situations, like we have a board member has a flip phone. He has no recording equipment in his house. I pleaded with the LES. I said, this guy, you know, needs help. Even just call him on the phone and record his voice on your phone. I was suggesting.
Point of information.
Well, then we need to put that in there, that we need the station's cooperation. You know what I mean? Like,
point of information.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
Okay. I know quite a bit about this type of process regarding audio. And the situation is that it would be actually quite easy to record everybody's cart. But it needs a certain amount of technology. First of all, candidates, it would be preferable if candidates either use their own landlines. If they don't have a landline phone, then they would need to maybe go to a friend's house or a family member's and use their landline. So this is one of the necessities. The other is that the NES could arrange with a staffer at the station to possibly allocate use of an ISDN line to connect from the station equipment and to be able to record. Now, there's other ways to do it, too, so that one of the things with carts is that to record carts by phone, whether it's landline or cell, it would require, it's really good to use the same equipment on the recording end and have it all equalized in terms of level and also in terms of tonality. That would be equalization, frequency-wise. So these things can be adjusted per caller because every landline sounds different. Every phone device that's hooked up to a landline sounds different. These are really critical factors when you're talking about audio that will end up being broadcast over the signal. So these issues actually can be solved in many different ways, and it's really not that difficult even during a pandemic. And so it is more difficult, but it is not impossible. All of the YouTubed candidate statements that Renee immediately started facilitating on her YouTube channel, most of those are unusable in terms of audio quality, and they're so inconsistent. All of those would have to be edited. And it's very important when you're recording audio, it's really much better to get as close to the signal you need and have it processed at the time of the recording than after the fact. These are complicated issues that have to do with the technology of digital recording, and that's always the case when you're recording. You want to make it sound the best at the time you record it, not have to edit it or process it later. In other words, Renee was trying to facilitate having carts recorded during the pandemic, that process went too quickly, and it was too haphazard, just in her
okay,
rush.
We've got two minutes left.
You know what you guys are doing here is you're having an open discussion with talking about many different issues that have to be addressed in regards to the elections process and other issues that pertain to possible bylaws, amendments, and proposals. I just want to stress again what I said earlier, because there was no response by any member on this call, and I do urge everyone to immediately respond now. And that is, I'm very concerned. In fact, I know that we are not going to have time within 60 days. When is it, the 60-day bylaws process, or is it 90?
In 30 days.
Sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
I was going to say in 3 weeks, on October 16th, opens the bylaws where the PNB accepts bylaws.
Okay, how long is that? How bylaws amendments, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay, how long is there any type of threshold that, so any bylaws amendment submitted by any listener member? Staff member or board member? The first question.
That's part of what I read at the beginning.
Okay, so let me ask you this. How many days...
Not just any member. It has to be from two LSBs vote for a certain bylaw amendment, or six directors propose.
We need to extend... I'm so sorry. hold up, Nancy. We need to either extend this meeting by 10 minutes. Does anyone want to move to extend?
I defer to William.
Yeah, William actually would like to get off, but
okay.
No objection if somebody wants to extend.
Yeah, I think, why don't we call this meeting I'm going to adjourn this meeting, and we can pick up where we are leaving off in an email thread, because I think a lot of what Jonathan's bringing up means that, you know, just to read the bylaws.
May I finish my point while I was on it, before you adjourn, please?
Jonathan,
Hello?
We need to extend. Somebody needs to extend.
James, I'm back. I'll move to extend for 5 minutes.
Thank you.
Okay. What I was saying is that, in my opinion, there should be no restrictions or bar that listener members would have to go through the LSB, any LSB or PNB members, to submit a bylaws amendment proposal through this bylaws process period. Now, again, you did not answer my first question, Janine, which is how long does that period last after October 16th?
30 days. It's announced on the air.
Okay, let me just restate this.
And then after the 30 days, then we vote. The LSBs and the PNBs vote.
You vote on what?
On the bylaw amendments that were presented to the PNB before the notice date.
And are those amendments put up to the listenership, the entire body, for ratification after the PNB votes? Okay.
No.
Okay.
They're just announcement briefly saying, I mean, this is the custom. We can change it, but right now it's just
Nancy, I'm sorry. You answered the question. The answer was no. Okay, so let me just submit this now.
But they are informed. The listeners are informed.
Just submit what I'm going to write up a motion or a proposal for this in the future immediately. First of all, we need to extend this bylaws period way past 30 days. This has got to be a 90-day...
No.
Jonathan, hold on.
Can I finish my statement?
No, you can't.
Why?
Jonathan, I'm sorry, but you need to read Article 17. Please.
It doesn't matter. I'm making a formal proposal right now for consideration.
Jonathan, stop. We had a full discussion.
No, there is no reason why you have to stop this meeting. It's already going.
I'm going to adjourn the meeting, okay? Because you're not. We had a full discussion how it was more time, and it got amended to be a shorter period of time. Right? And now you're saying it has to go back to being a longer time.
When did it get amended? During this meeting?
No.
Okay.
No. It was from 2016, the version
Okay. I'm sorry, but this process is not adequate in terms of the spirit of democracy in regards to our bylaws, Janine and Nancy. I'm sorry.
No, you can take it to your LSB.
I didn't say I'm solving it. I am submitting some ideas about what needs to be done. Number one, to extend this bylaws consideration by at least 60 more days. This is absurd. 30 days in this situation.
William,
sir,
you're out of order. Stop.
I'm not out of order. You're out of order.
I suggest you submit what you're talking about in writing. You've been included in the email thread with the...
So you know, I submitted a motion today at the beginning of the meeting, and none of you read it.
I sent it to people that I knew. Okay, so they got it.
It should have been read into the record. I have every right to submit a proposal for bylaws change or any adjustment in regarding to the democratic process of this network. That's why we established the bylaw elected board structure, in case you don't remember.
Please read the bylaws, Jonathan. William is on the
phone. Address what I'm saying, please.
Okay, Jonathan, I will.
You're evading every issue I'm bringing up. That is not appropriate, and that is out of order.
You're out of order.
Well,
stop it.
You are.
This is James here.
William's on the set.
And James as well, please.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, the meeting is...
Does somebody else want to share this meeting right now?
Oh, my God. Let the person on the stack speak.
This is William Hairwagon here. Yeah, I think you were trying to adjourn the meeting, and Jonathan's going to send something in writing. That's fine. And just everybody, I think we should remember that bylaw amendments go, as somebody said earlier, from six directors or two LSDs, or if it affects members' rights, then the members vote on it too. But I think we're out of time, and Jonathan should forward his information, and I think somebody already moved to adjourn. And we don't need a second, but I second.
May I just make one more statement about the where to find the California Corporations Code information?
Oh, please.
William was right before you. Just Google California Corporations Code or California Nonprofits Corporations Code, and it'll take you immediately to a site that has everything there. Chapter 2 is includes bylaws discussion. So he's absolutely right. It's easy to get to by Googling. I did it while we were in this meeting.
I did too. Anyway, and I read everything they said about open meetings, so like six different things. Thank you. Is Janine here? Are you muted? Here, I think we she got knocked off or what?
No, I think she's still there. She's still in control of the meeting.
Oh, really? Janine, are you
muted?
Janine?
I thought she was. Well, I think William called for adjournment. We're past time, so the adjournment is automatic.
Yes, and so we have another meeting next Sunday at the same time.
Very good.
Thank you all.
See y'all. Thank you.
Thanks all. Thank you, William.
Good night.
Good night.